Okay, 5 o'clock. We'll start the work session. Councilperson Malpezzi is late. Arch Treasurer, Mr. Peterson.
Good evening, Council.
Mayor of good news.
Good evening, members of the public. I wish we had more.
Distinguished members.
Hey, good evening. I don't have a lot of paper to hand out. I'm sure you'll be happy with that. Let me just kind of go over the highlights since we talked last. Last time we talked, our general fund was still not balanced up, and tonight our draft general fund budget is balanced up for 2012. We were short last time. We've taken some action here that was our development engineer. We just couldn't justify with the business activity level to keep our development engineer. So we're going to go outside consultants as needed to do that development review activity. As the money comes in from developers, we go do our studies on their projects and do our inspections and reviews, and we'll do it without an outside consultant for that. So it's less than a half time. We'll do it with an outside consultant. Did I say without? I was just dreaming. No. So we're now about 30 grand to the good in the general fund for 2012. Things are still happening.
We're laying off this employee then. We're doing.
It's done deal. And the other big thing to help us here for 2012 is, as we said before, we'll keep one police position open for all of 2012. When you look at my six-year look ahead, 2013, we're underwater again in the general fund because we put that police opening back in for 2013 is the assumption. But for 2012, we're about 30 to the good right now. Did get some good news, I think Friday. Our dental insurance for most of our folks went down, which is... Didn't expect that, so I've got to adjust all those numbers. There's probably about 30,000 numbers I have to adjust. But anyway, that'll save us a couple grand here and a couple grand there.
Mark, when you say we're going to leave the police position open, you mean we're going to leave an announcement open out there and accept applications, or just plan on not filling it?
There's two openings right now, I believe, with posted openings at the police right now, two openings. I think the police are having trouble filling it with qualified candidates. Another officer has announced he's leaving, and maybe even a fourth officer, perhaps. So, I don't know. I don't understand why it's so hard to fill a position, but I'm glad they're going through all the steps to get a qualified candidate. So two openings are posted and open. So you know, it may be that the chief could not fill all those openings all of next year, but we've got to keep one opening there for all of 2012 to make this budget balance.
Okay. I'm not sure if I understand the answer.
Okay. I probably used too many words. Is my problem.
We probably won't advertise, won't take names, won't do anything. We'll just have an unfilled but authorized position.
Maybe Steve isn't getting the fact that we anticipate that in 2012, if we count Mr. Pike, which was hired in 2011, we may put the other one on by 2011, maybe the one that's basically going through the process now. He might get it, but probably not, by the time of the process. And then there's two other openings because of two officers probably leaving. So that's four officers that we'll hire, and the chief is pretty convinced if we're lucky to get four, because I don't think by the time we go through vetting all those, he goes, we wouldn't be able to get to the fifth one because it takes the process to go through. Unless there's an unbelievable lateral, but we're not seeing the laterals now. The two that are in the queue are starting from square one.
Okay.
So he doesn't think, there's just no way we're going to put Phil five positions. We filled one, because we're pretty sure we'll fill the three places.
Okay.
Five.
Okay.
What was it, the cheapest one up in the city? Was it Lacey?
No, it's Kirkland. It's 51.
51 up?
You think they just hire the sheriffs, but I guess that's not the case.
They have been.
You would think. You would think.
Not all.
Probably not all. Still.
So, Gary, when you say lateral, is that lateral in our department or from some other?
No, lateral means that you got a guy that's already certified, been through academy.
From Linden or Bellingham.
He comes in, you give him a Fernell uniform, a week of training, and go out and go.
So, if I could ask the question this way. If we have a very comfortable cash flow, plenty of money, we still couldn't fill these things. It's not the question of money. We're just in a sort of a good news, bad news, fortunate.
Well, in one position needs to stay open to make this thing balance. If come June, July next year, revenues are stronger than predicted in general fund, I suppose we could reconsider that. But to be clear, we need one opening all of 2012 in the police department.
Yeah, so it's almost like I could give two answers to a citizen. We're not hiring him or her because of revenues or because it's not possible because of a small pool available.
You'd have to ask the chief. He's a hiring manager.
It's both.
Yeah. Okay.
How much, what's the number? Was it PN's position?
Yes.
Okay. What was that, the numbers attached to that?
Well, his gross salary and benefits was predicted to be about 96 grand. So we're backfilling with consultants at about tune of about 60. In fact, that's what the revenue projection is for 2012. So therefore, the cost for those outside consultants is about 60. So they balance. Revenue and cost balance.
Okay, so 90 for the year, and we're 10 months through there, so...
Well, it's going to help us in 2011, no doubt.
That's October 1st. Use.
Last Friday.
September 3rd.
Mm-hmm. So we're 30 and a few pennies. So good.
Yes, sir.
I would hope that the plan is that we're going to just go into a general fund and we settle.
Well, yeah, you need a comfortable little bit of a surplus. 30 grand is nothing, really. Yeah, you know, 30 grand is, we do not. I'm using 3% escalation.
We got good news. I think I kind of told somebody, but we got even got better news. Say they got another grant. So we were being asked to fund a domestic violence counselor that works out of Ferndale to the tune of $45,000, which I didn't even tell Mark because he had a heart attack about it. But they got a grant to cover that salary, and then they got a $564,000 grant. Even the bigger program, so that's even make it probably plus because the grant's only good for all of 2012. But so at least we have the domestic violence cancer for 12, which helped us. That grant came through.
A federal grant?
Yes.
We had that in at 60 grand revenue, 60 grand expense. So now it's 45 grand revenue, 45 grand expense. Assuming the person will work for $37.50 a month instead of 5 grand a month. Okay. The street fund continues to be a challenge. I've got it balanced up for 2012, but just barely. Like the general fund for 2013, we're underwater in the street fund in 2013 as well as the general fund 2013, but that's a year away from now. But we're required to look ahead 6 years. It would be really nice to either figure out how to cut costs or figure out some other dedicated source of revenue for the street fund. We're overrunning this year by about 35 grand through 9 months on the cost side for street. You continue to have street lights. I've allowed a few bucks for snow and ice, for the second half. You incur a few bucks January, February, and it goes dormant on snow and ice, and then it picks up, of course, in November, December.
What is that number?
What is that number? Do you want the budget for snow and ice?
Yeah, just as a round here with them.
Let me look that up.
4,000. Because I tell people that's usually what we gamble on the weather.
Yeah. snow and ice pencils out for 2012 at $38,744. $22,983 labor, $10,561 benefits and payroll taxes, and only $5,200 of supplies.
And when we talk about the labor, that's our in-house people, and we're expected time and a half for them.
There's a modicum of overtime. Included in that $22,983 is $6,000 of overtime dollars. But if that's, you know, you really can't predict what's going to happen. So we lay in here a number, and
it's only hopefully, but it's only overtime for the first basic emergency, and then we have to give them. We negotiate that it's 48 hours for shift change, and then we have to give a 48-hour shift change notice. And what we do is we switch everybody's shift, and then work it out where they're all at straight time. But we have to give them 48 hours, so we've got that 48-hour period where it's about everybody's on overtime then shift.
Switch to 10-hour shifts. Yeah.
Have we done any research on what Seattle's saving a gazillion dollars by switching their streetlights all over to LEDs?
Oh, it's a pretty significant change.
Yeah, it's huge. I think it's even. I read that. $400,000 and they're only 20% done.
You may know we pay PSE. Per their tariff, per their approved tariff, X dollars per streetlight, whether they're lit or not. So I don't know whether we could negotiate with PSC for cheaper lights.
They may use it already. I mean, I'd have to check, but we probably still have some of the old ones, too. So we have to just invest.
Not that we had a whole lot of new roads, but whatever we do, we add more streetlights, we get to pay for them. It just goes up, 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 up. More roads to maintain, more roads, more streetlights. So streets is a continual challenge. We're really leaning on solid waste tax to supplement gasoline taxes in the street fund for 2012.
Question on the snow removal. Is that a 24-hour-a-day operation that the city does, or how does that work?
It is at times, depending on the amount of snow. It can be.
Do we have a small work roster of private people with plows?
No. Oh, Greg, you want to handle that one?
What was it?
Because he's coming up with an idea of, well, a small works roster where we farmed out the snow plows. Would you like to explain that? Well, we spent a long time on that one.
Yeah, we spent some time talking to the union. And internally about that concept, a couple of issues that they had. One is, the qualifications for operating the snow plows, assuming that they would simply jump into our equipment, because there's not a lot of folks out there that have the heavy dump trucks that we have with the big industrial snow plows. So it's not like you could, find someone that just does this in their part time. So it'd probably be a question of them using our equipment, and there's a concern over how well they would take care of the equipment and also their ability to use the equipment. And there's also the liability aspect if someone was to plow a car or do something else and cause damage when in fact
they were having the way it was explained to me was they wouldn't do major roads and they would do all the little tiny or smaller places that our people don't go to anyway.
Right.
They'd be bonded.
Right. If we did that, I'm assuming they'd be using the smaller, their own vehicles, their own snow plows.
If it really comes down, our people are enough to just keep up with the major thoroughfares.
And if we did that, then that cost would be on top of what we would be paying anyway. So it would probably be an additional cost to the city.
Right. They've got private people part of cost. Our homeowners association has a contract with somebody.
It was part of, we entered into that idea, and that kind of led to some concessions on, let's work this out where, then if you're going to argue that point, we're going to come back with, we're going to ask for shift change. We're going to change your shift, and we have the right to do that. We negotiate that. So, again, on a certain period, great, that 48 hours, but we're going to give you 40 hours. We're going to change your shift. So now you're working at straight time. So that was, I guess, the compromise.
Yeah. And last year we advertised where in the city we would be plowing, so people would know what roads to expect to be cleared and which ones we just really can't feasibly get to in the amount of budget and manpower we have. So I don't know if, of course, last year was a pretty mild winter, but if we do that, we need to, of course, get that word out again so people don't have an expectation that, you know, sooner or later some plow is going to come by my road if, indeed, they're on one of the secondary roads that we won't have an ability to plow. So we just need to communicate and actually hope for rain and not snow.
And I think this will be our third year. Advertising was just
or
notifying people about the snow.
Right.
Yeah. Good. I passed out.
Right. Now this year, I mean, as technology moves forward, you know, Facebook, Twitter, whatever, maybe we can actually get the word out a little differently and perhaps a little better to reach those folks that, you know, don't read the paper or what have you.
Well, and our people really did. At time, they had extra time,
mm-hmm.
And so, you know, to finish out shifts, they did do some streets that we had allocated, and then those are the streets we got complaints on. We hit a couple streets, and they go, "Oh, you kind of blocked my driveway."
Blocked my driveway.
Well, we weren't going to do that street. Oh, we did that street because we had a little extra time. Oh, now I got complaints about it.
Mm-hmm.
Blocking driveways. That's how it works. I handed out a head count schedule. Let's take a peek at it. This shows 2011 on top, 2012 on the bottom. We're down 1.5 heads net. The way we get 1.5 heads down net, total citywide, is down one police officer, down the development engineer, and up half-time assistant court clerk. And when we did that, 19 hours a week for the assistant court clerk, We got rid of any overtime authorization for the court services manager. And the second page shows a little history from a peak in 2009. We're down 10 heads since 2009. Now, 2009, we did not keep all those positions full all year. I think that was the year of the bigger number of layoffs. But anyway, it's just interesting how we're trying to keep the budget balanced, and, you know, most of it's labor and salaries and payroll benefits and payroll taxes. So the general fund draft is balanced with a $30,000 surplus. There's no change, no assumption on property tax increases. That's assumed to be zero. No other additional sources of revenue. The philosophy is we project 2012 at whatever 2011 is coming in. And I just finished the revenue graphs. I'll send those out to you tomorrow for this year. And sales tax, solid waste tax are improving. Water sewers, strong. We had a pretty good month for water sewer connections. Even our first conversion from septic to city sewer at the 80% discount. That was good. So that's kind of all I have tonight.
Quick one, just to talk about that. Health department went and inspected the whole portal. You guys got the copy of the letter to Mr. Smith. There were no failing septics at all in the area. And the health department, we asked the health department to go see Mr. Smith personally. So he received that information.
Where was the conversion?
West Smith Road? They're already a water customer of ours, so I think the system failed regarding, didn't it?
Well, it sounds like the only really thing that we need to decide from a budgetary standpoint this year, it sounds to me like we're pretty much done. The last 2 years, or is it 3 years now, that we have not taken a cost of living increase?
I believe it's two.
I think it's two.
Are you seeing property tax? What are you saying,
no,
cost of living?
Cost for the council.
Oh, council.
Salaries.
It's been at least two. Perhaps.
It's in at least two, and I think I might, yeah. Do we want to continue that?
And it's in at zero right now. The mayor's in at zero, and the council's in at zero.
Good with me.
Department heads are in at three. on average. So. Police union settled at zero. The machinists are yet to negotiate. Teamsters has 3.5% for 2012. It's under contract for another year.
Mark, so currently the budget you have before us does not include the mayor or the council cost of living. Is that correct?
There's no cost of living raises in for the mayor or council.
What would that add? I believe it's 80% of the Seattle cost of living. Approximately, what would that add to the budget?
3 or 4 grand, a minor amount.
Yeah. I would not support this missing. We did last year.
I was
disappointed. Last 2 years. A small amount.
Yeah, in the past, if you remember, we adopted that ordinance, I think prior to some of you coming on the council, that set up that CPI adjustment. In the last couple of years, I think we've had you guys pass on a raise through a resolution, if I'm correct on that, because it was temporary in nature. And I guess the issues come up, it's probably more form over substance, but if should you want to forgo it again this year, whether it should be as a resolution or whether it should be as an ordinance. So usually an ordinance modifies an ordinance, so if we were to go that route of forgoing any raise, we should probably wrap it into an ordinance, you know, for the 2012 calendar year, just superseding that for that 1 year. But that's, again, that's more form over substance.
Councilperson Hansen, then Mitchler.
I argued this with Linda, not because I was in favor of the council actually taking an increase for the last 2 years, but so you deal with elected officials' wages and salaries. There's a figure that when someone signs up for council or for mayor, when they run, actually the mayor's different. It's council. There's an expectation that because of the way the ordinance is written, that your wage. Let me back up. You can't. Let's say you're paying the council a flat 200, and we today decided that we're going to drop that to $100. Those of us who are up for election, if we were reelected in January, our wage would drop from 200 to 100. Those who are not up for election, it wouldn't be dropped. You can't drop the wages. It's just like increasing. You can't increase the wages. If we were to say, well, instead of 200, we want 300, we can't increase that wage. We could for the four that are up for election, but the three that aren't up for election, that could not be increased until they're up and have been reelected. I would maintain the same thing would hold true with a inordinate automatic increase based on the CPI, that when you sign up and run for election, that there's an expectation that you're not only going to receive what the ordinance says it's going to be, but the automatic increase. Now, we have all voluntarily not taken
voluntary
that increase.
That was last year's voluntary.
But that's voluntary. If any one council member said, no, I don't want to go along with that, I'm not a lawyer, but I'm guessing that legally you would find that would be considered a lowering of the wages. It's not allowed until the election cycle is completed.
I just wanted to clarify that, and I've been researching this quite a bit lately as well, the RCW explicitly states that if it's an increase during that incumbent's term, they may not receive an increase, but it's actually silent on freezes or decreases. So I believe that the language allows for a decrease to occur during an incumbent's term. It's very explicit that it's increases within that.
Well, neither one of us are attorneys,
No.
Since it's silent, I would say that that's still up for, that would be up for some sort of interpretation legal.
Before I go to John, though, but it was in ordinance. We had an ordinance for the automatic CPI. So that, right. You're saying
if
the automatic CPI in ordinance was legal. Were you saying it wasn't legal?
Yeah, it's completely, it has to do with the incumbent receiving that increase or decrease. State law only discusses increases. It does not talk about freezes or decreases.
But the ordinance applied to the whole council.
Yes.
For 2011.
Each year.
Annually, automatic adjustments.
Annually, each year.
Yes. But because when you ran for the office, that ordinance was in place and provided for that automatic increase based on the outside, the CPI.
Yeah, correct.
It wasn't me that was increasing my own salary. It was what the law says I can't do. It was being done.
So to get this straight, the council was legal in freezing, but
it was unanimous.
Because it was unanimous.
But they don't have to. Right. They wouldn't have to do another ordinance because the ordinance is already in place.
No.
But if they wanted to freeze or decrease.
Right. And I agree. Lacking any action by the council, the automatic CPI would be just that automatic.
Wouldn't I have to go back, catch up 3 years?
No, I don't know because I don't know if the language in the resolution said freeze or just forgoing the increase. I think it was forgoing the increase. But anyway, I think for next year, what might be acceptable is basically on an individual basis. If you want the increase for next year, let Mark know, and we'll let payroll know. And if you don't, let us know.
Is that individual? Are you saying individual? Are you saying individually?
If someone on the council did not want their raise for next year, they could not take it.
As an employee,
they could choose not to. Just like, well,
I'm going to go to John first. I'll go back to you.
I believe this was the case. I believe that our prior mayor, every time he got a paycheck, he just signed it over and gave it back to the city. That was his choice, but he got paid. So I can say that if you want to give back some, all, or none of your in-ordinance raise, that would be acceptable. I mean, of course, it would be acceptable if anyone didn't want to.
The city of Bellingham actually did the exact same practice. They said if any employee during the cuts would like to give back, we're not going to reduce it, but you can give it back to us.
The reason I bring this up is because it does not appear, just from this brief conversation, that there's unanimity amongst the council the way there had been in the past for not taking the raise. So I think the idea of whether it's an ordinance or whether it's a resolution doesn't matter, but I have a feeling that whatever form that took, it would not be a unanimous 6-0 vote. So in order to avoid the potential problem of the cutting of one's pay, the involuntary cutting of one's pay, and whether that is indeed allowable or not, I think it'd be just as easy if individually you made that choice and we go from there.
Interesting. Councilperson Mushler.
Yeah, thank you. And I agree with Councilmember Hansen in that I think that, I'm going to go first with what Greg was talking about. My assumption in the ordinance, which I think was in 06 or so, council put an automatic cost of living. I think the intent of that was to kind of remove it from politics. When legislative bodies do that, they just don't want to have to every year deal with it. And some years people are running, some years people aren't running. So it just removes it. I believe the intent of a ordinance like that. And number two, since it is an ordinance, I would think that other than intentional action by council, it just happens automatically. I think that's what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
The last thing I want to say is I actually thought about this when I ran and was elected, which I think I don't know if I knew I'd won yet because that was a long election, but I remember that I asked one of the council members, well, how much do you make if you're on council? And he explained it to me, and there was a cost of living. So when I was elected, and we were saying for Brent, we knew there was going to be a cost of living increase at the new year. However, during that lame duck period of time when there was a sitting council and there were two members that weren't going to serve in the new year, that's when they voted for the pay freeze. They voted for my pay freeze, in other words, and Brent's pay freeze, and then we voluntarily did it next year. So I thought that's kind of weird that we were expecting a certain amount, and the difference would have been $6 or something like that. So you don't haggle over $6. So that seemed a little peculiar to me that it was the previous council that was leaving that voted for that at the time because of budget cuts.
It's like tithing.
So
if I voted for it, I apologize that it's like that.
You hurt my feelings.
Yeah. Councilperson Hansen?
Well, I want to react to this. The way Greg first explained that would be a payroll nightmare. Some could receive the raise, some could say, no, I don't want to receive the raise. Actually, what you were talking about was you received the raise, and you turned it back.
It's happened before.
Or give it to charity or
whatever.
But then you're still taxed on that.
Well, you get charity bail.
No. Yeah,
you're
still taxed.
Yeah, you're right. You are. Yeah. This is food for thought, because if and when this comes up for vote, I haven't even decided how I'm going to vote. But food for thought. The council and mayor's wages have been frozen for 2 years. Is there any other, I realize we're not employees, but is there any employee group in the city that has taken a two-year or a three-year?
No.
Not as a group, but individuals, yes.
That's true, individuals.
And that's under the non-represented. If you remember a while back, one of the matrices that we used for the union was a certain percentage of the AWC salary average. And in our cost-cutting measures of the last few years, we decided to attempt to apply that to the non-represented. So when we did that comparison, a couple of our employees, most notably our police chief and our public works directors, wages were above that matrix. And so for the last 2 years, I believe, they've received no increase. And under that adjustment scenario, others have received small, and then our planning director came under a multi-year contract, so he wasn't. It's a mixed bag. But yes, there are two people that I'm aware of.
That's different than the employee group all picking up.
Because
a couple of the people in that group, the non-represented,
right,
were actually above the average.
Right.
And the average, so they essentially got put in a position. But we actually
went to the a lot of the bargaining groups, if I remember right, a couple of years ago, and said, "Would you consider this?"
Right.
And we're
now, some of them rejected it out of hands. Other ones said they will defer it. So, like the machinists, they for, I believe it was
2009,
right? They didn't get their raise, but they got it the next year.
Yeah.
So they were made whole during the life of their 3 years.
Same with the two lieutenants.
And the same thing with the two lieutenants. Yeah. They just simply said, I won't take it this year, I'll take it next year. And, of course, the next year they got what they would have gotten the prior year as well as the previously negotiated then current year.
Yeah, so they're like raises like 12%.
Councilperson Zimmerman, you had a hand?
No? Well, I was just going to ask if it was a catch-up situation where it was just a matter of time and then they
got it. So if under a three-year contract they got, I'll make up numbers, 3%, 3%, 3%, if they gave it up, they could have gotten 6% at once because they deferred that first 3%. Those numbers aren't exactly what it was.
Mr. Mayor, if I did have a question, you're always quoting the AWC. Where's our council? Has anyone done any research on where our council is on the AWC?
Yeah, they're all over the board. There are cities that they get paid nothing, I mean $50. And there's other cities where they actually remunerate them, you know, rather well.
Bell, California.
not quite that way.
They're mostly in jail.
And for, if you remember, under the AWC salary survey, all of the listed job titles are segregated by brackets of population size for cities. They don't do that. They actually list just, I think, in alphabetical order, all of the cities in Washington that report and what their council members get and what their mayors get. So,
aren't there a couple of cities in Washington where they consider their council full-time?
Oh, absolutely. The larger cities, you know, the Everetts and the exactly. Those, they pay truly full-time wages. Not that we couldn't take those cities and bracket them.
I actually have that. I feel like Joe McCartney. I have a list here. I inquired about this with Municipal Research, and they sent me cities between 7,500 and 15,000.
Mm-hmm. That's our bracket.
Yeah, and so it is kind of all over the map. Interesting enough, we're one of only two cities that pays for meetings. So you guys could scan this later. I could just forward it to Sam and send it to you.
I'm pretty sure I can access it.
Yeah, I got it real quickly because I was interested about who did the meeting kind of thing. But
did
it is.
Did they give an average?
You know, he didn't average it for me.
They can't calculate an average because it's so all across the board. It's not like another employee where they can do a high average.
Yeah. I mean, how the other Burlington pays council members $800 a month. Cheney, $310. I'm going to find a low one here. Edward, $250. And Ferndale, if you count the meetings, $500 and change. The high one was Shelton, $1,300. They paid for a meeting up to 12 meetings a month. Mm-hmm. Sumner, $1,700. Woodinville, $600. Paulsville, $500. I mean,
yeah, it really is. And I guess, and talking about not the council, but the other groups. If you remember, you know, we settled with the guild, and now we have the two lieutenants and our planners. Those two machinist unions. Their contract is also up. At the end of this year. Wednesday, we're meeting for the first time with the machinists, and not really sure what information is going to transpire, but at least we're starting those discussions. And then if you remember, all of the department heads and non-representatives, their contracts are also up in December. So here in the next month or two, I envision bringing forward hopefully the results of the machinists, as well as proposals for the non-represented groups. The Teamsters, the biggest group, which is both the clericals as well as the Public Works and Parks group, they have one more year on their contract, so they already have in place what their 2012 wages are. So,
which is a 3%.
Right,
three and
which
a half.
Is 3%. So our budget, our budget right now, which does have, as Mark mentioned, a small positive difference between revenues and expenditures, will change. It'll change based on your decisions for council pay. It'll change based on our negotiations with the two machinist groups, and it'll change when we have a chance to talk about the non-represented. So while the number now is positive, it's going to be, you know.
You have 3 or 3.2 for machinists in the budget?
Three.
Yeah, I think we just did a free assumption across the board for everybody, and then
just five people.
Mark, is that to say that the non-represented employees, is your budget include a cost of living or not?
The non-reps are in at 3% per Greg's direction.
Although some of them are up for contract renegotiations, too. That's
the non-reps are not represented by any union. They represent themselves, and they negotiate with Greg and Gary. Those are tedious negotiations, let me tell you.
Okay. Councilperson Ingram.
Well, if I recollect correctly, when we passed on our cost of living increases for the last couple of years, we were laying people off. We kind of did it as a symbolic thing that, you know, we're not going to allow ourselves to take a raise when we're gutting you out of a job. And, you know, it stabilized out a little bit when we laid Vienna off, but that wasn't for budgetary reasons.
Yeah, it was.
Well, there were other considerations.
Yeah, it's considered a layoff, however.
But I don't know. I'd like to hear what some of the other council members that have been quiet on this, what your opinions are, guys, because I could go either way on it. I don't know. I honestly don't know which way I'd go.
Councilperson Goodrich?
My only comment on it right now is I'd like to see what the ordinance was or whatever was passed last year, that the actual wording.
Two years ago.
Or, you know, that put the freeze or whatever in place to see what was actually passed, what was the wording on there, and how does it apply to this year, or does it apply to this year?
No, it doesn't. That's clear. It was a 1 year only.
So it was 1 year, then so two things have been passed.
It wasn't by ordinance.
Well,
it was a voluntary.
You know, we passed an ordinance that had perpetual annual CPI or a factor of CPI. Then we had a resolution that pulled just the next 12 months and said freeze.
Mm-hmm. And
And as Paul said, it was kind of a good faith negotiation.
Right, exactly.
To give you something, say, hey, look what they're doing.
Right.
It's been 2 years.
Well, I don't think we did it. We did it twice.
Same thing twice. Well, that's what I'd like to see.
Exactly.
You know,
but they were for what? That for that budget for that annual.
Only for that one.
Only
year.
For that year.
So,
but they're catching up.
So if nothing happens, the preceding ordinance, because the other ones were resolute, the preceding ordinance that had the automatic CPI would then
kick back
into it.
Oh, okay.
I should note that I've been trying to research this. I could find the 2009 one that froze 2010, but I find no resolution yet for 2010.
We included it in the budget.
Yeah, we might have just done it by a cent.
I think it was adopted by budget ordinance.
Yeah, I think that's what it was.
Yeah, so there's no document for the last one, but I can get you the one for 2009, which was the language used, which is actually on the city's website as well.
Good.
And one last thing, if you've read my administrator's report, I may have been whistling in the wind, but I did make the case in here that I would like us to at least discuss, and we will because it's on the agenda for the future, the concept of a property tax increase for next year, at least a statutory 1%. I appreciate that, you know, again, for those of you that are currently running for office, it makes it tough. It makes it tough any year. But we have forgiven or given up the 1% for the last 2 years. So given the uncertainty and the small fund balance right now, I think it was the last 2 years.
Just two. I looked just it two. Up. Only two. Not three, but only two. And thinking about the...
three, because I don't remember passing a property tax increase since I've been on the council.
Yeah, I looked at the budget books. And thinking about the medical insurance costing the general fund about $70,000, a little 20 grand property tax would certainly help toward swallowing that.
When are you going to get the exact number on medical for 12?
They've given me 11% increase. They've not changed it. It looked like a final.
Is it a final?
I believe it is.
Then they changed dental, went down.
The one outstanding wild card of any substance is the fire district.
It is.
And we won't know what that is until late November, probably December, right around there, when they actually do finalize the assessment rules. But here, the first meeting in November is where we have our scheduled 2012 property tax ordinance. So you can think about it for a minute.
I'm discussing this with just formal basis with Russell. There's a possibility that we might even go down.
There's a possibility.
He
thinks so.
We've been talking. He thought that a 3% would be a safe number. The last we talked to him, I think, was about a week or two ago, and he's been talking to the county assessor rather regularly. And so it really depends on if the tax assessed valuation in the district goes down again. Then, of course, they have to raise their levy rate to get that same dollar amount. And what happened last year was that the decrease in Ferndale in tax assessed valuation was greater than the decrease district-wide. So they when they made the levy rate, it applied to us in a greater extent. So we think it was an anomaly, but we're going to have to wait and see. And I know Chief Russell hopes that it will be flat or a modest increase.
That's Mr. Mutchler and then Zimmerman.
So just to kind of tie a bow on the last matter of mayor and council salaries, I think the consensus was that, it should be included in our draft budget because it would normally be by default because of ordinance whenever that took place. Then if council decides it does not want it, it needs to do intentional action at that point. So I think it would be helpful to include the mayor and the council. I also wanted to ask the mayor and maybe Mr. Young, you to give us, if you can, some reflections at future meetings as to what staff, what you may need in order to pay staff in the following year. Occasionally we raise staff salaries for different reasons, and we have to handle that as a budgetary item. And if we had some heads up, and maybe that's not possible, but I'd like to request it if we can. Yeah. Some ideas.
It's possible.
What we need to be prepared for in the future. Because contracts don't come up neatly in December. You know.
Well, strangely enough, all the non-representatives go to December 31st. Okay. That was an accommodation for the budget issues. Because before, everyone was
so they would be negotiating during this period of time.
Yes.
So that's actually kind of helpful to us then.
Right.
Okay. So then, if all goes well, unless we hire somebody new, we wouldn't have to change the budget middle of year because of a contract.
Exactly.
Okay. Thank you. That'd be great.
Customer Zimmerman?
I just want to clarify with Greg that the fire contract last year was largely due because of the large industrial realignment of.
In fact, I had it backwards. There was a bigger decrease in the district than there was in the city. So it was absolutely driven by the refineries. And that's the maddening aspect of it, because the valuation of the refineries is not something that's done at the county level. It's done at the state level.
It'll be interesting because ConocoPhillips has changed hands, and there could be a new valuation based on it changing.
Right. So, and obviously it's in their best interest to lower their valuation, and so whenever they change processes or what have you, they seem to be pretty good about lobbying the state and not recognizing what seems to be continued value added out at the refinery. But things depreciate, so it all depends on what they build versus what they take offline.
Greg, to refresh my memory, what was the big hit we took in January on that?
No, I think more like 140, 150.
145,
150.
That's
a
big surprise.
Yeah.
That's a big post-Christmas surprise.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you want to take that? I mean, we got a couple more minutes. We usually go a 10-minute break. So, if you have anything that you want to bring forward to the city for budget consideration?
I don't really consider this budget consideration. Are we discussing anything about the city rolling itself into the fire district so we become part of the fire district?
Greg, you want to jump on that? Because we talked about it, and they were warm to the idea, and now they're extremely cold to them.
Yeah.
they saw those dollars fluttering.
Well, there's a couple of issues. One is, from a technical standpoint, it would take two votes. It would take a vote of the citizens of Ferndale to say, yes, we want to join the district, and it would take a positive vote of the district saying, yes, we want the city of Ferndale to join in. In a practical matter, it has an impact from the standpoint that we would absolutely just take that line item off our books. We then lose 50 cents of our tax assessed levy rate, because if we're part of a district, then we don't have that 50 cents of levy rate that we could charge. That doesn't mean that we would take a cut because we're not at our statutory limit minus that 50 cents. But it would give us a fairly small cushion to go up on tax levy. The bigger issue, sometimes the bigger issue, and I've been in cities that have had this discussion, have gone both ways, in fact. One of the bigger issues, and this might account for the lack of a warm reception from the district standpoint, is that citizens of Ferndale would then vote for fire district commissioners. And given the population base in the city versus the population base in the district, it could, if not immediately, over time, change the composition of the fire district commissioners so they're very Ferndale resident-centric. And sometimes that is as good of a reason as any for an established fire district to not be too excited about it. For our purposes, if we believe that the decrease in the valuation was an unusual and perhaps one-time event, then joining the district is not in our best interest. If we think that decreasing property values are something that's going to be repetitive in the future, then it's probably in our best interest to join the district.
Okay, quickly, Councilperson Zimmerman.
You know, last meeting, Mark let us know how much money we're not receiving from the fines, and well, that was like around $1 million, is that right?
Over a million dollars.
I would like to put out for the council's consideration a community service training director, someone who is in our part-time employment, and when people can't pay a fine because they're just deadbeat broke, guess what? They can show up Saturday morning with a rake and shovel and do some parts, you know, some
road crew or chain gang, whatever you want to call it. It's worked very successfully for Blaine. And I've talked with the guy that directed it, and I'm just saying, if we're not getting anything, let's get something and let them feel good about themselves. And by putting that training director in there, also we might be able to, you know, having someone really clever at the top find a grant for it. Right?
Well, let me check in to see how Blaine does it, see how it's structured. Yeah.
Okay, 10-minute break. Or a little less than 10.
Is chain gang the one you direct?
You adopt the EIS. And like, well, of course, I mean, isn't that the purpose?
Yeah.
Well, the final is to have a preferred alternative.
Exactly. Yeah.
But then that's what I did. But probably right. After discussion.
Well, right. With discussion, and then based upon the vote of the council, then it's
going
to make a change.
Should we split up candy?
I know. I'm
curious.
I think it's because now I did the deck.
Well,
way back.
It might be. Maybe it's a question of what direction we want to give.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a question for Richard, especially. Do we have to run through them, or do we maybe want to?
Because I think that if we can do FDIS, we need to make sure that it's not.
We need to do comp plan before FDIS. Otherwise, we have an adopted FDIS that is in out of compliance with the.
Or does it need to just proceed to plan action?
Oh, that's right, yeah. You're right. This is it.
So FDIS, we want to make sure that we're not giving them something that they're going to reject.
Right.
So there's a discussion.
And then the PL, and then the concurrency, and all that.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Well, you're ready.
I need an update though, anyway.
Make sense?
I think it makes sense.
Hopefully the two pictures together come out.
Hurry up. Just go do something.
Well, that or either one can go to the airport.
And what is Cleo's part? Because he has an interest in this.
Here. He's on the other side of Slater.
Here's Slater.
He's the third bot.
Interconnection of roads would be great. Is that back way into the airport?
Exactly. You know, right
you
now,
get to the terminal that way.
This road ends here. Cope comes up. It ends right here. So, yeah, either one of them could head over to the airport.
Yeah.
And for that matter, Cope could actually go over and connect right there. But then you're in the flight path. You have to go covered. So that way
we can't stop.
Headlights don't interfere with.
Yeah.
Plus, if an engine falls off, it doesn't.
There you go.
Someone flushes a toilet.
Showtime here.
I'm not sure.
Don't sit down, Mel. Don't even sit down. Save those knees.
Get out of my way.
All things rise and join the split to our flesh. No coffee. Pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
You may be seated. Thank you. Our clerk will now take the roll call.
Councilmember Malpezzi.
Here.
Councilmember Hanson.
Here.
Councilmember Ingram.
Here.
Councilmember Buckley.
Here.
Councilmember here. Zimmerman. Councilmember Goodrich.
Here. All present and accounted for. Great. Okay, next up is the public comment period. This is a point where anyone from the audience, whether they've signed up or not, can come forward to the microphone and address the council on anything that is not on tonight's agenda. If they want to talk to the council, you can do it now. I have one person signed up, the famous Sarah Kohler, maker of fine toilets.
Oh.
Welcome.
Thank you. Sarah Kohler, I'm the branch manager of the Ferndale Public Library, and I was coming just to give you guys a little bit of a report card. We've been in the building a little over 6 months now. I thought you might be interested in how we're doing there. I'm going to start with the good stuff. The parking situation is much better most of the time. As you guys know, that was really our number one issue in the other building, and now patrons can actually get to us and enjoy the library. Our circulation has risen significantly due to that. We checked out 32,000 items in August. August is traditionally one of our quietest months. Busy, busy, busy. The park has been a great opportunity to make some new connections. I've built a really good relationship with the Heritage Society, the Old Settlers, the Boys and Girls Club, and the Senior Center. And those connections have been great to make, and we've got some good relationships going. And the floor space that has expanded has been a lot better for the staff and the patrons. I don't think we had realized how much we were working on top of each other until we got out of that situation. And the fact that we have a bigger, more efficient, and safer staff area has been a huge plus. We get lots of compliments on the building. Patrons really like the color and the scheme, and they walk in and go, oh, this feels so open and nice, and they really enjoy the building. Bad side, the meeting room is just too small. I think we've discussed this before, and you guys already knew that we felt that the meeting room was not going to meet our needs. Toddler time, preschool story time, we've had to split toddler time into two sessions because it just won't all fit into that room. Last summer, some of our children's programs, the Lego program alone, had 80 kids at it. That's not including the adults. Mm-hmm. The Heritage Society has been very generous and has helped us with some of that and is letting us use Tillicum House. All they asked for was for the damage deposit. But, of course, their programming comes first, and it should. That's how they make money. And so there are times that we need it that it is not available for us, and then we're trying to fit it into the existing space. The parking isn't always great. Most of the time it's pretty good. When there's an event, even trying to get staff to work has been an issue. Pioneer Days in particular, Old Settler Days, it was a lot of fun to be in the middle of that. The quilt show was going on. Lots of people came into the door. We've signed up a lot of people who haven't had library cards in years because the park events has brought them down to us. But even getting staff to the library to work during those situations is a little bit challenging. And this summer was hot. That building is not designed to be passively cooled. I had every window open I could open. We had the fans going all the time, and there were times the building got up to 80 degrees, which is uncomfortable to work in. People think of libraries' work as being kind of passive. It's actually very physical. We do a lot of walking, a lot of shelving. So it got a little uncomfortable. We had all the doors open as much as we could, but that is a bit of a security risk. You've got 3-year-olds and 2-year-olds running around that you have to keep an eye that they're not running out the door and going into the parking lot, not to mention materials going out the door just a little easier. I had the city open the windows up at the top for me, so we kept those open all summer. Even though there's an alarm system on, because I just, you know, we can't go back and forth trying to open and close those, and I just recently closed them, and so that was kind of an issue. And then the lack of an electric door at the front has been a real problem for several of our patrons. If you're in a wheelchair, you're in a walker, you're a mom that has a stroller, getting in and out of those doors is difficult. They're heavy, and so we kind of keep an eye and try to run over and open them for them. This summer, we kept the doors open as much as we could for that reason, but, of course, now it's getting too chilly to do that. So, anyways, I just thought you guys might be interested in how it's going. Yes, Councilman Mitchell.
Much slower than Zimmerman.
Thank you for being here.
Sure.
And I'm glad it's a mixed bag, but
yeah.
Working. Your meeting room, by the way, I was at that Lego day. There were as many adults as kids, and I'm surprised the fire department didn't show up.
Yeah.
I don't know what the size of that room is. I can kind of visualize it. About
the capacity. The capacity is 49.
And what would be the capacity of the new community meeting room at the new library?
I believe it's 65, and then we'll have a smaller room. And the new building will be designed that we could open up and actually spill out into the yard if we needed to, into the kind of the opening. The doors will open up completely. So it's a program like that. When it's a nice day,
so
we can actually spill out.
Customer Zimmerman?
Sarah or Mark or whoever. Energy costs. I'm always asking energy costs, and I never get a decent answer because it's all tied in together. It's a formula. Is there a way that we can track the energy costs for heating and cooling for that building?
For Pioneer Pavilion?
Yes.
Joan probably has that answer.
BTUs and energy costs, and kilowatts and all that stuff. If you just keep an ongoing record, because that's something that we'll want in the future.
Sure.
Thank you.
Councilperson Ingram, then Goodrich. I'll go with you first, and
Well, I hate to be the guy that always sounds like I'm beating up on the library, because it's not my intent. But I think we had parking discussions before this pavilion opened, and that the hope was that the staff would park on First Avenue, and the new parking places that are on First Avenue. It's a short walk. Come on, folks. Why tie up the parking lot for the patrons with staff cars?
That's the first I've ever heard of that. Oh.
I don't know why it's the first. We've discussed it on several occasions. And we are right now discussing with the council committees the powered doors, but they will be on the side. They will not be in the front.
Okay. No, that's better than what we have now, which is not.
I would interject, though, that we clearly know that as soon as we get funds available, that design that exists of the parking lot now is unbelievably
inefficient. Yeah. Inefficient.
The parking lot, I mean, and we've had it designed. I mean, you remember with David King,
yep.
With a simple redesign, we could add 30 parking spots. Easy to
yep.
that. So that, I mean, part of it is when we restriped it, I remember looking at it going, okay, that's nice for safety, but boy, that loses a lot of parking spots.
Mm-hmm.
It's safer, but it still looks silly.
And I was hoping that my house could get up to 80 degrees at least twice this year.
Councilperson Goodrich?
I have a question, library question. I'm looking to buy an e-reader.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that one of the companies, I don't remember which one, said that you can check out books
on
the library.
Yes.
And that kind of surprised me. And I was
the library has an e-book collection. It used to be that you could not use a Kindle to do that, that the Kindle was proprietary, but that has changed as of about a week or so ago. So, yeah, we have actually a pretty good e-book collection. It's fairly new. But, yeah, if you want to come down, I'll be more than happy to show you how.
You get the book just for a certain amount of time?
Correct, just like a regular library book, and we do only have so many copies, just like we would a hard copy book. So it's very possible that your book is checked out and that you would need to get on request for it. You would get an email telling you when it's available, and you go online and you download it. We have tons of audiobooks that way as well. We've been in the audiobook much longer than the e-book. And
I know, I used to get audiobooks. You know,
right. And if you have an iPod, and many of the e-reader devices also have audio capacity that you can download audiobooks. Yes?
So are you like is this like a Netflix for libraries type of thing?
I guess that's one way to think about it, yeah. I mean, libraries are trying to keep up.
Yeah.
Right. Technology, we try to stay with all the emerging technology that we can and meet patrons' needs.
So he checks out one of the electronic devices from you?
No.
Have the device.
It's your device.
Do you have to have your own device? But you can use an iPad. You can use a Nook. You can use a Kindle. You can get an app for your Droid. You can get an app for your iPad. You can get an app for your iPhone. It's very accessible now.
Councilperson
Mutchler, you appropriately had your hand up.
Thank you. I want to make sure, in light of Councilmember Ingram's comments about parking, Mitch, I heard it correctly. Parking currently is fine, adequate, and improvement, and an improvement except on special event days.
Correct. Correct.
So in the future, when the library is next to the City Hall, you might have the same problem on street festival days.
Oh, sure.
That's going to be a problem. So staff parking is not really an issue right now, is it?
No, and during like Pioneer Days, we parked way in the back parking lot down by the ball fields on the other side and walked through the park to try to keep the parking more available closer to the main entrance.
Any more questions for Sarah? Okay.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Anyone else from the audience would like to come forward? There's a hand being waved. A man with a great head of hair. Please come forward, sir.
Yes, you did.
Rick LePave, representing the Ferndale Holiday Spirit Project. I just want to briefly let everybody on the council know what we've got planned this year, because you may have heard we were trying to put on a parade. Well, cost constraints wouldn't allow us to do that, and there were a few other things we couldn't get over. However, we've got some real exciting stuff this year. The landlord, Robert, over here is going to give us the bottom floor for our project. Now, last year we did over 300 baskets and did about 5,500 for the food bank, Wacom Humane Society, Fisher House, and the women care shelter. This year our target is 500 baskets, and our plan right now, I'll be finishing up the matrix tonight, is to make a Christmas card front on that corner building right there. So if anybody asks, contact me. If anybody has any information, I would appreciate any ideas the council or anyone in City Hall has for this project. I think it's really going to put us on the map during the holiday season this year. There will be radio advertising on this again, so we're going to be spreading goodwill this holiday season again. So thank you very much.
Any questions, Councilperson Mutchler?
I'm sorry, Mr. Lefebvre. Which building again are you in the first
building? Right across the street. What was originally?
The leader block.
The leader block building. Yeah, the architecture is such that I've been looking at some of the old decorating styles and got some great ideas. I hope you guys like what we do.
Thanks, Rick. That's
okay.
Awesome.
Any other questions for Mr. Lefebvre? Okay. Thank you. Good job.
Thank you.
Anyone else from the audience like to come forward? Seeing none? Okay.
John had her hand up earlier. Did you want to add anything? Oh, okay.
Okay, we're done with the public comment period. Council, next up is the consent agenda.
Move to accept the consent agenda.
Second.
Okay, then move and second it. Further discussion? Seeing none. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries. 6-0. Good job. Okay, next one is we had a presentation from the Bellingham-Whatcom County Tourism Bureau, but I don't see anyone from that organization unless they really got young.
Got young and short.
I don't see anybody looking like they're from there, so we'll, I guess, move that to another day. Okay. Do you want to do the presentation for them? Sure? Good. Okay, next up is the public hearing on the school park impact fee expenditure timeline revision. This is an ordinance. Our planning director, Mr. Burnett, will start.
All right. My presentation is probably going to take less time than the public hearing rules and procedures. State of Washington followed, I think, Oregon, which moved from 6-year time limit to a 10-year time limit. In light of the recession, for expending impact fees. The city's proposing to make that change as well in order to reflect the state requirements. Our park and school impact fee ordinances are the only such ordinances that make specific reference to a 6-year time limit. What we're proposing to do is change the language to refer to the authorizing state rules. There is no requirement that we have to wait 10 years or even 6 years to spend them, and I think as the treasurer will say, we have not needed those time limits up to now. So I'm happy to answer any questions. This is a public hearing because it is Growth Management Act related. That's all I had.
Questions for staff before we go to public hearing? Councilperson Mutzler, then Goodrich.
Yeah, I support this, obviously. It's to the benefit of the city. But I'm just curious why we, the school impact fees are within our jurisdiction on this matter. They're the ones that are going to spend it. It's just curious to me.
They are the ones that are going to spend it, they being the school. We don't really have any control over them. We don't take them in. However, it is contained within the Ferndale Municipal Code. So by extending it out to reflect state law, the school district can determine as their own policy that they wish to spend it more quickly. If they spend it less quickly, that would be their...
So it doesn't seem like it should be in there.
Yeah, it's an anomaly of the Growth Management Act because counties and cities planning under the Growth Management Act are enabled by legislation to assess impact fees. Schools don't plan under Growth Management Act. It's only counties and cities. So it's an anomaly of state law that cities impose but do not collect nor spend school impact fees. It's just... I think it was one of those unintended consequences that someone woke up in the middle of the night and said, wait a minute, schools can't collect these things. They don't plan under growth management, so we cannot have GMA-authorized fees.
And are they required to, like us, it has to be capital improvement.
Exactly, exactly.
So what if a school district doesn't, well, the general question, have we ever returned an impact fee?
No, but we did go for many years with the school choosing not to assess them.
So if they decided their population attendance was going to be a level and they weren't going to build, they might say quit collecting.
Right. Just like we don't have to collect traffic impact fees, park impact fees. Obviously, we get into some issues if you ever want to build a road or build a park. And the same can be said for schools. But, yes, they don't have to assess them. But if they do, they have to have a capital facility plan that drives the math that, you know, spits out the fee.
And before we go to Councilperson Goodrich, can you, the public may be interested, because a lot of people don't realize how school impact fees are collected.
Yes, school impact fees, unlike the rest of our impact fees, an applicant who is creating a residential unit, those are the only ones that are subject to the school impact fee, would go to the school district and would pay the school district those fees. They would then come back down to City Hall and show us the receipt that they had paid. If the school wishes to accept less in terms of an in-lieu contribution or something like that, they may do so. But the city has no role in it beyond telling them you need to pay your school impact fees and verifying that they did.
Thank you. Councilperson Goodrich?
I kind of like the idea, kind of the drift we're going, where we're referencing the RCWs instead of spelling out things. Is that going to present a nightmare down the road with trying to keep track of changes in the RCWs, or six to one half dozen the other?
They let us know, and, you know, since we have meetings with the other cities, it's generally, hey, what are you doing about this? What are you doing about that? So, yeah.
Actually, it makes it easier because now we don't have to replicate what the legislature does and bring once again to you that which we have to do anyway.
Well, that's what I looked at. I thought it was kind of a neat idea, and it seems to be something. I just wondered if down the road we're, you know, creating any issues or something by doing that.
It's incumbent upon us to keep track of what the legislature's doing.
Yeah. I like the idea.
There are some things, not this one, you have a choice here, but there are some things where the state legislature will say, here's the direction we're going, and you don't really have a choice. You know, with the county's changing of the urban growth area, that's our urban growth area. Whether we like it or not, they've identified it. So doing more of this is definitely lean.
Okay, any more questions for staff before we open up the public hearing? Seeing none, okay. Thank you, Director. Okay, I'll open up the public hearing. The public hearing is a formal opportunity to give testimony to the council for consideration in the decision-making process. If you intend to speak, it's necessary that you sign up on a sign-up sheet that will be available at the counter located at the front. I don't see anybody there, but if you want to speak, we'll still allow you. Written comments will also be submitted to the city clerk prior to the beginning of the hearing. When the mayor calls your name, proceed as follows. Proceed to the speaker's rostrum, the microphone, clearly state your name and address. If you're speaking as a representative for another person or organization, so state. State whether you're a proponent, opponent, or neither. Limit your comments to 3 minutes after all comments are heard. If you have something to add,
has already been stated at the discretion of the mayor, you may be given an additional 2 minutes. There will be no demonstration during or at the conclusion of anyone's presentation. During the public testimony period of the public hearing, the council staff and the audience will remain silent. After your presentation, council members may wish to ask you questions. After the last question is spoken, the hearing will be closed and the council will enter a regular session. The subject of the hearing is an agenda item for council decisions, decision or referral. These rules are intended to promote an orderly system of holding public hearings to give every person the opportunity to be heard and ensure that no individuals are embarrassed by exercising their right to free speech. So I'll open the public hearing at 6:20:29. Anyone in the audience would like to speak on the ordinance? Okay, you're all excited. I can see. Okay, I'll close the public hearing at 6:20:40. That was a long one. Councilperson Munsley.
Yeah, I move the adoption of the ordinance, which is Agenda Bill 1110002, which extends from 6 to 10 years, the timeline for using impact fees.
I'll second it.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Further discussion? Seeing no further discussion, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries 6-0. Okay, next up is the ordinance for the 2011 budget amendment. Treasurer?
Reviewed in Finance Committee. I'm sure able to answer any questions that you may have.
Okay, any questions for staff? Seeing none, Councilperson Mutchler, first hand up.
Give me a moment. I know I have a question. It came at me kind of quickly there. I'm looking at the cover sheet, letter E, that says expenditure of the funds we draw from the city's $1.5 million commitment. I thought our commitment was larger than that. I thought we made the initial $1 million, and then there was the extra commitment because of the special window of opportunity to give more.
We did issue bonds, $200,000 in 2010, so that came off of that commitment.
So the number that we see is kind of like it's coming down.
Exactly.
Oh, okay.
Councilperson Hansen, you had your hand up.
The cost overruns are going to be shared equally, as we have done so far on all the design costs.
That is something that I have proposed to the Whatcom Foundation, and I know Maura Ingram is here. We have not had a chance to talk, so it's going to be one of those situations where I have no idea what she's going to say.
And so you're going to put her on the spot.
Yeah.
Welcome, Maura.
I'll be surprised along with everyone else.
Thank you. Yes, I'm sorry I wasn't able to get back to you earlier today, Greg. Greg did communicate a desire to proceed with the cost sharing that we've been engaged in for the last few expenditures. And the level of the request would be $30,000 to the Community Foundation. And that is, I'm happy to take that request to a couple of members of our executive committee, which is the process that we have for grants $50,000 and under, and expect that I can have an answer to you very rapidly around that, and I wasn't able to do that today based on the query. But that said, I think that while I can't commit the board to that action, I think that it's highly likely that that would be a request that would be approved. So I hope that is as non-committal and yet optimistic as possible.
Since we have our esteemed guests here, any questions?
Sure,
you're
not a politician, Mark.
Esteemed.
It's a fine line.
Any questions for Maury before we let her go? You're thinking hard. Councilperson Hansen.
Well, the motion I'm going to support then is to support half of it, which will put you on the spot. Basically, because up to this point, we have shared equally in the design costs, the construction grinds, and that sort of thing, as opposed to either the city or the foundation picking up that entire tab of the design costs. This is just the wrap up of the rest of the design costs.
Okay. I'm sure her answer is still the same.
Yeah.
Just to wait to go for a board. Any direct questions for Maury? No, seeing that.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for coming. Nice seeing you. Councilperson Hansen.
I would then move the budget amendment as presented with the expectation that we would be approving half of the additional design costs that are requested for the library. Is that clear enough?
Our clerk is nodding yes.
I'll second that.
With shaking his shoulders, I don't know if that's a solid yes.
Second it.
Okay, so it's been moved and seconded. Further discussion? Councilperson Malpezzi was first up.
I'll defer to John since he's on the committee. My question had to do with the committee. He might answer it.
So this is just reaching to my memory. We've already approved as council to, I think, to pay up through the completion of bid-ready documents. This is really just supplying the money to something we've already committed to. Is that correct? Okay, I'm glad I asked the question.
We committed $125,000. The foundation committed $125,000. This is in excess of that.
To be clear, though, to the question, though, mm-hmm. you did have a vote, though, to move forward with these documents. So you, in essence, have asked the work to be done. Now you need to pay for it.
And this will bring us to issuance of permit, bid-ready documents.
I don't want to be argumentative, Sam, but we also had in that motion that we would pay half.
Of everything, yes.
You are correct.
Yeah, the way the contract worked with SHKS was that through, in essence, it was half and half to get us all the way through bid documents. Now, SHKS's contract has more expenditures once we start building the building. But getting us to bid-ready documents, it was a 50-50 between us and the foundation.
So, Councilor Zimmerman and Mutchler.
So, by doing this, we're saying that everyone in the community or majority of the community or a section of the community, they've seen the design, they like the design, and for all terms and purposes, SKSH, the architects, will be paid up through this, and their job will be complete until we actually work the bid, and then if we decide for them to come on, manage the contract in some form or be involved with it or make some adjustments.
Exactly.
But yeah. Basically we're saying we like it the way it is, yeah. As you presented it.
We have an approved design and a full set, a big roll, a big full set of plans along with a three-ring binder of specifications that we could, if we had the money tomorrow, go out to bid. I mean, it's completely designed and ready to construct.
And the other part that we should bring it out and make it public is that if we don't have the money, there is a chance that there's some things that will change between now and when we bid. I mean, it has a shelf life.
Yeah, yeah. Depending on the length of time between, I think, in about 2 weeks or so when the permit should be issued and when we construct, it could be that nothing needs to happen. But if some... If some codes change, if the plumbing code or the electrical code or the earthquake requirements, if those things change between now and when we build, then we would need to go through the plans and be sure that any code changes are reflected on those plans. So if all that happens is time moves on, some building codes change, we would just need to, again, have SHKS or someone like that go in and be sure that the newest code requirements are reflected in the design. If we were to decide later on that we don't like the design,
right.
Now you're talking a much bigger project where it's taken us over a year and $250,000 to design it. It would probably take us, again, that sort of effort. But assuming that we are happy with the design of the building, only thing we would need to do is refresh it for code changes and then bid it.
And my consideration is that, you know, having looked at it, I'm kind of general feeling that, hey, it looks like another modern police station. You know, there's nothing that really goes with the downtown, you know, turn of the century feel, and that, you know, has the public fully been
I know that the library, and perhaps they could speak to it better than I know there was a fairly extensive process. You remember, we started off with the design development, which was just kind of the quick little drawings, and then we went into more of a detail where you actually saw some of the facade, and now they've actually gotten to the point now where they are literally picking cabinet finishes and wall colors, and I mean, it's really gotten down to absolutely everything you need to design the building. So my understanding was that there was a public process and a vetting that went by that approved the configuration and size and shape and windows and all the things like that, that there was a public process that had buy-in on the design that's reflected in the plans.
Yeah, I'm not.
Go ahead. Councilor Smolkezy?
So is this in addition to the 250, the combined 125 from us?
Yes, because it's just not for SHKS. The majority of the money is actually for our, the civil engineering, which is a fancy way of saying everything except the building. You know, the driveway, the parking lot, the storm drainage. At one point, we were talking about doing rain gardens, which is a facility where when the rain falls, it goes into a grassy area, and then the water literally sinks into the ground. That's why they call it a rain garden. Now we've found out through subsequent civil engineering work that the subsoils are inadequate. That is, the water would not indeed percolate down the way it was supposed to. So now instead of a full-blown rain garden, they now have some smaller ones. So the engineering, the parking lot has been slightly modified. We now know for a fact where Main Street is, since we've rebuilt Main Street. And there were some issues about the transition from Main Street onto the parking lot and the grade differences. That's all been resolved. The retaining walls, the stairs, all the things like that had been worked out so someone could actually, a contractor can pick it up and actually build everything. So the majority of the extra costs are related to not so much, in fact, they're not really related very much at all to SHKS's architectural work. They were related to the ongoing civil engineering work to get the site itself, not the building, but the parking lot areas and the drainage and the utility areas around the building.
Okay, and a follow-up question. How time-sensitive is this? Because I'm leaning towards approving half, but it doesn't sound like,
Well, SHKS and 2020 Engineering, that's all civil engineers, they are, working daily on this. And my understanding, they stopped in. We had a meeting with them last week, and I believe they were something like 70% to 80% done, and they believe that within the next 3 weeks they would actually be able to submit full documents to the city for preparation and issuance of the permit. One of the things I did pass out as a separate sheet, an updated cost estimate. If you remember back in March when we were having this discussion about going into the final design, the question came up was not so much how much have we already spent, but what do we need to spend to actually get this thing built and open? And on this sheet, I had my original March numbers, which was based on something like, I think, a 50% design. That was design development. Now I've updated this sheet based on the information from last week, which most importantly was an updated cost estimate from SHKS, and you can see that the top three, six, or seven or eight lines has to do with what we thought the building would cost, what the parking lot would cost, what landscaping would cost, what contingency and assumed contractor profit, design escalation, sales tax, basically what they thought the building itself would cost. And you can see that the numbers when you're at 20%, 40%, 60% design, you have a large design contingency. And as you get closer to 100%, that design contingency shrinks because you are getting closer to 100% design, and you're now able to shift, if necessary, some of that contingency into the actual building and landscaping itself. So you can see that from March to September, we thought the building itself has gone up by $54,000, but then following that are a lot of negative numbers. The parking lot is $68,000 less. The landscaping is $123,000 less. Contingency is down 13%. As you would expect, the design contingency is down because we're now closer to final. The sales tax is less because the total cost is less. And obviously the design architect's bill is less because we've been paying them. So we're now closer to before they had a full cost for all of this, a little over, let me pull out the number. In March of this year, we had a a full cost estimate of $4.175 million, so a touch over $4 million. In September, we now have a cost estimate of $3,967,000. So the cost of the building has now gone a little bit above $4 million to a little bit below $4 million. That accounts for, the, again, the top few numbers on this list. But then I added in what other costs we have outside of building the building. We still have to do some wetland plantings. We have a construction manager we're going to hire. We need our wetlands permits. There's going to be what's called commissionings and support, then miscellaneous inspections, insurance. And at the very bottom of the page, there's also a note here that we what is not included is furnishings, because furnishings are going to be paid for by the library district. But we're going to be putting in the shelving and the counters. They're actually going to be furnishing the chairs and the tables and a lot of the stuff you see, not exactly the stuff, but a lot of the furniture that you see down at the library, that type of furniture is either going to be reused or purchased new for the new library. So this hopefully gives you an idea of, from today forward, what we think a total turnkey cost is going to be versus the amount of revenue we currently have. And I guess there is, if there is a good news story on the revenue side, back in March, we thought we would need about 2.3, almost 2.4 more, $2.4 million more. Now we believe it's more closer to 2.175. So, you know, about $178,000, almost $180,000 less in construction costs going forward than we thought in March. That's really, that's based on a tighter design, less of a contingency. But this gives you an idea of what, not again, not what we've spent already, but what we need to spend. I also gave you that separate sheet that Mark put together on the library construction front. This shows you what we've already spent. So if you take this sheet from Mark, which is the already spent, and then you add this sheet that I came up, which is a probability of what we still need to spend, roll those two together, and when we have a final complete library, the combination of these two should be the total cost going back from 2006 to whenever we finally do build.
What's the already spent number on this page? I did want this. You just referenced this page.
Right.
I'm looking at it now, and I was going to ask. I hope you don't mind me interrupting. Which number on here is sort of this is what we have already spent?
Well,
of city money.
Right now, excluding the interfund loans, which is just money going back and forth, we have spent since 2006 directly on this $548,000. So about $550,000. Not included here is the cost of that wedge piece of property next to, which is about $350,000. So all told, we have spent about $900,000 on the library going back to 2006, starting with the feasibility study that was done, all the way through what we believe we're going to be spending this year for design and civil engineering.
So I have in line customers from Mutchler, Zimmerman, then Goodrich.
So on, and I, our finance director put this together, maybe in part because I requested some information this week. Would it be fair to say, should, first of all, I'm under no delusions. It's the responsibility of the city to build the library, to find the money for the library, put the library. It's not, I don't believe it's the responsibility of a foundation or the Friends of the Library. And since we don't currently have a plan to do that, and you have a, thank you for the number, by the way, 2.2 million is what we, additional, by the way, that's 2.2 above our 1.25 that we need to come up with to finish this project. Should we not be able to do this? And should we, status quo becomes what we're doing right now and we don't make a change, would it be fair to say that to the citizens that we have spent $548,000 that basically is gone and not useful, not being used? I wouldn't count the land. I mean, the land is an asset, so I wouldn't count that portion that you mentioned earlier. But we've spent $548,000 of city money so far that could possibly be money that is kind of gone forever. There's no value in that money if we never built that library.
If we never built a library, we would still own the land.
Mm-hmm. Yes. But this doesn't count, this 548, because that land deal was, this is a swap and this and that.
Exactly.
The 548, let me say it, this way. Could a citizen say 15 years from now, and we're all gone, that council basically, if they wanted to put it this way, they let go, they wasted $548,000. Could they say that and be fairly accurate?
Well, anyone could say anything they want. Some of those costs are not lost costs from the standpoint of, obviously, we have the land. Some of the costs in here was for the survey. I don't know if you remember this or not, and this might be a little tedious. The boundary lines on the land next to City Hall were nebulous/non-existent. One of the old property corners was a tree that was there 100 years ago and is no longer there. So we had to have the property resurveyed, which took a long time to do. We've also done a lot of geotechnical work, that is, you know, drilling down and finding out what the soils are. So there's a lot of investment in the land, the survey, the geotechnical work, the civil engineering to determine and the storm drainage. So even if we don't build a library there, if we were to build another city structure, all of that work is still useful. I think, nitpicky or perhaps even a little more accurate, if we never build the library, what we lose is the library design, the true SHKS design work.
And that's a certain amount of money, about $300,000.
Yeah, that's probably a good ballpark figure.
And that would be the city portion of that, the $300,000,
the
whole.
No. That'd be because SHKS's total contract through construction is $369. It's about $269 through bid documents. So if we never build it, we'll only pay SHKS about $269, half of which the foundation paid for.
The last portion of my question is, I understand there's a possible grant of $250,000 that is contingent upon these bid-ready documents, so on and so forth. And we have the right people here to ask whether that's a sure thing or maybe a possible thing. And
I know. The only thing I know was that the grant was $250,000, and it was contingent on us actually awarding a contract. Actually, it just wasn't bid-ready documents. It was actually groundbreaking with a construction contract. They wanted to actually
And we're not going to do that. So
we're not going to do that. Now, whether, and perhaps
Maury
or Jones
could clarify
whether we've done enough good things.
Because that's included on here.
It's included. Yeah. It's assumed that it's continued. Yes.
Hello again. Greg clearly outlined the requirement, the contingency for the grant. We're actually going to be in touch with that foundation, the Norcliffe Foundation, in October. We have held off because we wanted to make sure that we felt that we had all of our ducks in a row to have the conversation. So I can't give you a definitive answer at this time. I'm not convinced that we won't be able to find an acceptable solution that would guarantee that we're able to hold the grant in the community, but at this point I'm not in a position to give you a definitive answer. Okay.
It does help you if we finish the documents tonight.
Absolutely.
Any questions for Maury while she's standing here from anyone else? Okay.
How's the fundraising going?
I had actually a very good conversation with a potential major donor this morning. So
Yeah,
we will keep you informed as things progress. As we've talked about before, these are never just one conversation. These are always multiple conversations. But to your point, the city's continued commitment to the project in the form of keeping the process moving, and as requested, the foundation wants to be a partner in that. That is absolutely vital to being able to go out and encourage people, whether it's organizations like other foundations or individuals, to contribute to the project. They definitely need to see the city's commitment behind
it. You're probably aware that the city adopted what the treasurer calls a sink fund. So we are making next year payments to ourselves that we would have made to the bonding agency if we had done this. And that should raise a nice amount of money to help us to meet our commitments. Besides what we're doing tonight, what else can we do?
Well, I think a number of you have already articulated in many situations beyond council meetings your support for the project. I would say that you can always be an advocate for the project. And what we're trying to do at the Community Foundation and through the Friends and the library staff is to make sure that, much like you heard from Sarah this evening, the value that the library provides to the community. Because what we've learned is that it's so much more than what people consider to be just a building with books in it, and that it's not just e-books. It's the almost social services that are provided by the library. It's the stories about latchkey children. It's the stories about I actually heard a story from, and I will be brief, but got the question opening, from a library staff person that there was a young man who had actually just extricated himself from a gang that lives in Ferndale, and he came to the library as the place where he could find a peer group that would actually kind of help him stay on the straight and narrow. He was reaching out, and the library staff was there to help connect him with activities. So nobody mentioned books, but it was really about making that connection happen for that young man. And that's one story among many. So part of our function is really to help people know what the library is doing that's actually benefiting the community besides the building, because it's easy to get sort of focused on the facility and on the books that go inside and on the computers and all of those things. But that's really just the backdrop to the stories that the library means to Ferndale.
Great. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Joan, you came forward. Would you like to speak for a bit? Welcome.
Thank you. I wanted to add my thanks to what has been said already for keeping this project alive. And I also wanted to remind everyone that this started out as a win-win thing. When we talk about what we've already invested in the library project, we have to also bear in mind that we have a wonderful new police station that's happening because of the vision of moving forward and making this all of these different projects work out. So there's just a lot of enthusiasm. When we talked about the building and Greg said that there was buy-in, I would say that there's enthusiastic and highly motivated buy-in to see the project continue. And so, again, I thank you for your support.
Thanks, Joan. Okay, Councilperson Zimmerman, then Goodrich.
I don't argue with too many of your numbers, but it says March 2001 and September 2001, so we're about 10 years off there.
Oh, sorry. Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So we step forward in time.
I think you're accurate to say that I live in the past.
There you go. You're old folks. The other thing is, where is it reflected in here, the voice commercial services for the move? We need to anticipate the move from library spot number 2 to the final library. And where is that reflected in here? Because that's right now it's at $21,000.
Yeah, if you remember, if my memory serves me right, I thought that we were paying for the move to the temporary library and the district's going to pay for the move to the permanent library. So on Mark's black and white, voice commercial services for $21,500, and again, that's the move into the temporary library.
Okay. Thank you.
Councilperson Goodrich? Personally, I don't see this as a – to me, this is a kind of a no-brainer issue, and I'm surprised at how long the discussion's kind of gone. In regards to Councilmember Zimmerman's comment about the building, I think that's been a long time decided on the design, and to bring up questions about the design tonight is really kind of out of context. And I'm looking forward – I've seen the artist renderings and stuff – been around for quite a long time, and so it's been there for a while, and to say that this budget amendment is going to hold up their process, I think, you know, is not something that we need to be doing tonight, and I would call for the question.
Well, let
the motion.
Let me comment, because this is
all
this is
second,
right in the
I'll
comment.
Second the call for the question.
You seconded the call for the question. So we're going to vote to end discussion. So that's the vote now is the vote to end discussion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, the motion carries 4-2.
Roll call. Roll call.
3-3.
Roll call vote.
Okay, I'll let the discussion continue. Councilperson Zimmerman.
Yeah. I would say this is a no-brainer, but this is the final baby. This is, if we approve this, this means that what we're seeing is a full blessing for everything, and the bid documents, everything after that is a change order. And so if things aren't quite worked out, we're going to be back and revisiting it. But, and hopefully, you know, the money's looking good, and the fundraising will do good, and everyone's not too in love.
So for clarification, what do you think, what is your statement, things haven't been worked out? What do you mean by that?
If, in the if things haven't been worked out.
What specifically are you talking about? Things haven't been worked out. It's an architectural drawing.
Right. $2.1 million.
Yeah, no, but right. It's a legitimate question.
Yeah, yeah.
What are you referring to if things haven't been worked out?
No. If things do not work out as far as raising funds, of getting all the money together, then there's some changes. And it, you know, it's a strong statement that we all love this building. We don't have any problems. There's going to be no changes. And the money's good. And if there's going to be any change orders, that's going to affect the bottom line here also. But, you know, in the red, it all looks pretty good that it's coming out where
we should have been. That was all made when we decided the go ahead with the design documents. We already made that decision to move ahead.
Okay.
So this is just to cover the additional cost of what we already decided to do.
I'll go to the treasurer for clarification.
Well, just to clarify, these consultants, the architect and the civil engineer, are under contract. They're working diligently to finish this. They're sending me invoices, if not weekly, at least monthly. I need the funds to pay those bills.
Yeah.
Now, this current budget amendment tonight calls for a transfer from REIT 1, $65,000. Now, if we get money from the Community Foundation in the next few weeks, then I'll be able to move less money out of the REIT 1. But I need this commitment tonight to pay these bills.
Councilperson Malpezzi was next.
I am not supportive of the amendment, which I think we're all supposed to be talking to right now. That's a motion on the table.
No. The vote to stop discussion didn't go through.
I thought we had a motion. Okay, the main motion had an amendment to the to what was.
All along was to adopt this with the library funding.
Okay, I'd like to move then to amend the main motion to pay for what staff is recommending, which is, I believe, $65,000, so we can start paying bills. So I'd like to amend the main motion to the $65,000, not the half.
I'll second it.
Can you restate the main motion? I thought we already, it was clarified.
We haven't voted on the amendment.
No,
anyway.
But Mel's motion, what was Mel's motion?
To pay half.
To accept the budget amendment allowing up half of the half of the $60,000 or so, with the anticipation that the foundation would come up with the other half.
And then your motion is to allocate the full amount.
The full amount, which is what the staff was recommending and what the committee approved.
You would just have
65.
To vote no on the amendment to have that happen, I think.
And then
pass it.
Well, there's now been a motion made and seconded, so you have to vote on it.
As I understand Steve's motion, it takes out the half. And
it takes out the half.
Whole,
right.
And so on.
Correct.
And then if the foundation comes through the other half, it's going to go back.
Well, no. It means that we're paying it, not the foundation paying the other half.
Certainly, we wouldn't refuse the donation of the half. Okay, so that's a moved in a second. Councilperson Mutchler?
Well, this wasn't my original question, but clarification. Was the original agreement half? This is always what we've agreed.
Councilperson Hansen?
Well, the original agreement on the design of the library was that we would go to full design standards, number one, and that the city would pay half and that the foundation would pay half. This is a cost overrun. What my motion did, which Steve's changes, is it continued the half. We would pay half of this. The foundation would pay half of this. And instead of $125,000, we would be at $155,000. But so would the foundation.
I see.
Councilperson Mutchler.
Okay, well, I'm going to support Councilmember Hansen's motion because the bill will get paid.
Well, no.
Councilperson Malpezzi's motion. I'll go back to the bridge.
So do you have, okay, discussion on Councilperson Malpezzi's motion. Councilperson Goodrich was first, then Malpezzi.
I have a procedural question. If we vote for for Council Member Malpezzi's motion, then it's all done.
No, then you would have to vote on the amended main motion.
So, okay.
You're currently voting to amend Councilmember Hansen's main motion.
Okay.
To the full amount.
Okay.
Councilperson Malpezzi.
And to speak to those motions, my intent of this is not for us to pay for this full amount. I fully heard the foundation say they're planning on coming up and paying for it. However, I'm also hearing our treasurer say that he would like to start paying some bills now. You know, in an ideal world, this all would have been worked out before it came to us. But right now, I would like to honor the staff's recommendation here and move forward with paying some bills. So that's my intent, is not to add additional costs to, us.
Councilperson Ingram?
Question for the treasurer. $32,500 pay the bills you currently owe?
No. I need $65. Now, I don't have all those invoices on hand yet. But through emails, that's the balance to go on the contracts and the balance to go on the civil engineering. All the bills on hand have been paid with your approval tonight of the those claims. So in the next few weeks, we'll be getting the rest of the bills in to bring us up to bid ready.
Councilperson Goodrich?
This is a question for Mr. Peterson and maybe the foundation. If we only did half of it tonight, would by next council meeting, which is 2 weeks, would the foundation have an answer by then on the other half?
Absolutely. Actually, I've heard back, thanks to the wonders of technology, from one of my board members already, and I'm hoping that before the discussion gets too much further along, I hear from the other one.
We'll do our part.
Because we, for grants of this level, $50,000 and under, in between board meetings, we're able to have two members of our executive committee vote and approve a grant, and so we're partway there, so I'll keep you updated. But once we have the approval, the processing will take very, very little time, so should not be a problem for the city.
So would that, Mr. Peterson, would that work if we only did half tonight, and then if worst-case scenario, the half the next council meeting?
Yes, it would work.
Okay, the motion before you that you're going to vote on now is to pay the full amount. So that's Councilperson Malpezzi's motion. So any more discussion on that motion? Okay, seeing none. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, that motion fails. Now we're on Councilperson Hansen's original motion to pay half. Councilperson Mutchler.
I'm going to support the motion, but I just want to say that I'm getting to a point of being uncomfortable with spending citizens' money when the council doesn't have a plan to build a library. I'm not saying the foundation should have the plan. Friends of the library should have the plan. We just don't, and I understand why, but we don't have a plan. I also want to remind council that we also have spent $900,000 remodeling the Boys and Girls Club pavilion. And so we've been very committed and have spent a lot of money, really, on these projects. So I'd like to see the library move forward, but I'm going to be hesitant in the future to spend any more monies until we come up with a plan to get the job done. And that's all I have to say on that.
Okay. Further discussion on the motion? Seeing none. Councilperson Hansen motion to allocate half of that amount. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries 6-0. That took a while. Okay, next up, E2 bid consideration, Eaton Somerset Willard Washington Sewer Project. Our Public Works Director, welcome, welcome.
Good evening, Janice Marlega, Public Works Director. We advertised and opened bids to replace the failing sewer system in the three alleys located between 2nd Avenue and Portal Way. And this is the first construction project to be covered under the 2011 sewer revenue bond. We received 8 bids. The low bid was received from Colacurcio Brothers in the amount of $493,052. And the engineer's estimate on this project was about $530,000. So the low bid is below the engineer's estimate. We're asking for council approval to award the low bid in addition to about a 10% contingency, a $50,000 for a total of $543,052.14.
Councilperson Hansen.
I'd move to accept the low bid from Carla Curcio as presented.
Second.
Councilperson Goodrich had his hand up next.
I was just curious. I didn't understand this. Maybe it's clearer than I made it out to be. But
don't we have to have a second to pour
to the
second?
Base bid plus alternate one?
We heard it.
Okay. So what
plus
we
alternate one?
Alternate one was just one of the east-west alleys. And so what we wanted to do is just kind of give ourselves some options and see what the base bid would be, and then to decide whether or not we wanted to actually do all three of the alleys. And so my recommendation is award the, based on the bid that we got, award the base bid and the alternate. That will take care of all three of the alleys, and then we're done in that area. We don't have to go back.
This is the three blocks that go between Eaton and Washington down the alley, one block or half a block off of parallel to Second.
Yeah, there's the one, the longer north-south alley, and then there's two east-west alleys that come off of that that are between Second and Portal Way. So this would take care of all three.
Councilperson Mutchler?
So as I recall, the council approved a $1 million revenue bond last year for this. So we're spending half of that on this project. So this must be a really important.
Yeah, this is our number one priority as far as the sewer collection system and replacing that. Yeah, this is one of our oldest systems, and definitely we have a lot of maintenance issues out there. This is work that needs to be done, needs to be completed.
It wouldn't surprise me to find some cedar pipe under there like they did on 3rd.
Okay, has been moved and seconded. Further discussion, Councilperson Ingram.
Just one question that came to mind, Janice, and I don't know if any of us in this room know the answer to this question. Carla Curcio getting this bid to do the sewer, when are they going to start?
Well, per our contract, council approves tonight, then we send out the contract documents to them, and then they have 5 days to return.
Is that going to affect the manpower at the police station?
I would say no. They probably use a different crew because they probably have their building crew out there now at the police station.
Okay.
And this would be their civil.
I just flashed through my brain. I just wanted to ask it.
This was back hose.
Okay. Any further discussion on the motion? Okay. All in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries 6-0.
All right, thank you.
Okay, good. Okay, next up is the Airport Road Extension Support Letter, and I'll go to our esteemed Mr. Young.
Yes, if you remember, for those of you that were at the committee meetings, a local property owner, Cleo Callen, has come forward and asked the city to consider sending a letter to the port encouraging them to extend one or possibly two roads that currently dead end prior to reaching the airport from Ferndale. That's Cope Road, which is a road that parallels I-5 and dead ends, and also the other one is Wynn Road, which is the extension of Rural Avenue. And I put in a couple of maps in here. One is fairly close up and one's a little bit further away, but anyway, the idea would be that either one of these roads could be either extended to meet up with the existing port roads at the airport, or alternately could go on the other side of the airport. I guess historically there's been some desire to develop that side of the airport. So this letter, I sent a draft of this letter to Mr. Callen to see if it was indeed what he had envisioned, and he wrote back to me saying that it looked fine. Assuming that you're supportive of this, I'll go ahead, and I was going to send this letter, but I think more importantly I was going to give Charlie a call out of the court and talk to him about this in advance of just a cold letter coming in the mail, and maybe set up a time to talk with him to see if this is something that the court commissioners indeed are interested in doing someday.
Councilperson Mutchler, then Ingram.
Yeah, I like this, but for selfish reasons, as a biker, it's hard to get to Bellingham from Vernon. There just isn't. You go Marine Drive, you head down towards the reservation, cut across, or you're northwest, and it's just bizarre. You'd think there would have been something by now of this nature to get you down to North Bellingham on that side of the highway.
Right. I understand that years ago there was a master plan of some form through the FAA to actually develop what's considered the west side of the freeway. There's, I mean, west side of the airport. The one, if you notice on here, you can see the runway running straight up and down. Then there's another runway running at an angle. That runway has been decommissioned, probably since after World War II. It's just a long time ago. So whether that prior runway was the impetus for development on that side of the freeway and on that side of the airport, and then when they decommissioned it, it went away. I don't know, but yes, it does seem to the casual observer that either one of those roads were probably envisioned to continue to the south and link up with the airport.
Customers in Ingram, then Hanson.
Now, does either one of these scenarios cross the south end of the runway?
Yes, Cope Road. If they extend Cope Road again parallel to the freeway and hook it up with, I believe it's Williams Way, which is that would cross. It would cross under the flight path. And my understanding is that if that is indeed the case, there might be some issues. You might have to actually cover the roadway, so there's no chance of headlights blinding an oncoming landing aircraft, or for that matter, anything coming off of the airplane landing on an unsuspecting car. So whether they want to connect it to Williams Way or whether they just want these roads to go on the west side and therefore avoid that pathway, I'm not sure, or for that matter, just how serious they would even be to the concept. That's why I hope to find out from talking to the port director.
Who owns that water tank?
The port.
What Councilman Ringer was talking about is our understanding is that there's a 2 million gallon freshwater reservoir that is located on port property that was built years ago by the FAA. In anticipation of this west side or further airport development.
That's empty.
It's empty.
Yes.
They maintain it.
They maintain it, yeah.
It's not just sitting there rusted. You maintain it.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Could be a valuable asset.
Yes, it could.
Person Hanson, then Mutchler.
This comes at a very opportune time. As you all know, I'm on the Airport Advisory Commission. The Airport Advisory Commission has a committee of the whole. The Airport Advisory Commission, as a committee of the whole, has been, for lack of a better word, I'll say shanghaied into being the lead committee for what will essentially be an airport comprehensive plan. And our first meeting is the 27th of October, and that will be discussions of where roads are going to go, where buildings are going to go, and on and on and on. So this support letter would just be one piece of that.
Push,
if you would, yeah.
Just make sure we're very interested in the operation of that water tower.
Yeah.
Get the water.
Oh, okay.
And our treasurer is very interested in saying that we priced $12 million one on Smith Road, so we like the price of that one better.
I'd like to move to approve the letter to the port supporting the road extension from Ferndale, 1110-00.
I'll second that.
Okay, been moved and seconded. Further discussion, seeing none. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Good move. Good luck, Mr. Hanson. We have faith in you. Okay, resolution, personal policy revisions.
Our city clerk? Excuse me, the mayor's getting aggressive with my beer.
To be clear, this is not a personal policy of mine. This is a personnel policy that I'm suggesting for you. Personally, I did author this resolution, however. The three items related to this, this personnel manual that the administration and staff operate under currently has been in place since 2008, which was based on a very, very comprehensive revision by the previous city clerk along with a personnel attorney that worked on this. As the years go on, obviously sometimes state laws change, and the usage of the manual has allowed us to see some things that either are working very well or not working not well, and we'd like to revise them. And sometimes we change things or technology changes beyond us, and we'd like to catch up with that and make sure that we have something in place. With that in mind, the three major changes are In the personnel policy, there's discussion about military leave. It's paid military leave. This is explicitly based on state law. Our personnel policy currently mentions 15 days of paid military leave. However, state law requires 21 days. So the change simply puts us in concurrency with state law, providing for the 21 days. The second aspect is the sick leave policy. There's a provision that allows an employee who uses 8 hours or less of their sick time per year to be provided with 2 additional vacation days the next year as an incentive for not being sick on the job. We found that there are some collective bargaining agreements that provide employees who max out their sick leave bank with 2 additional vacation days, and there was an inquiry from some employees as to whether they would then get 4. We would like to clarify that for them by noting that it's one or the other. So this change simply gives them the 2 additional vacation days as that incentive if they use 8 hours or less, or if they max out their sick leave bank. The final change is the largest one. It simply incorporates a supplementary policy into the personnel manual, social media policy. This is similar to our travel manual, which is a supplemental policy to the personnel policy. It's simply cited in the personnel manual, and then you go pull up the travel manual. The biggest change that I wanted to note directly for the council is that there is a section that says that council elected officials, all elected officials, specifically in a legislative format, obviously, as well as advisory body members, should not participate on the city's social media feeds, on the city's Facebook page or Twitter feed or whatever might come in the future, so as to prevent a violation of the state's Open Public Meetings Act. As you're aware, if 4 of you in quorum form start debating city issues or discussing them on the city's Facebook page, and we have not gone through the proper procedure of noticing that meeting, et cetera, we are in violation of the state's Open Public Meetings Act. That opens up a big can of worms, including for any official who knowingly violates the act to some penalties. So that's kind of the way we've done it. It's based off of, I believe, the city of Bremerton's social media policy. They had a very good one, and so I went through there, and it's nearly identical, although it discusses obviously my position, the community information officer, as opposed to them having some type of other communications officer. So that's the basic language change. But other than that, the social media policy pretty much just writes out what we already do at the city of Ferndale, and largely because we're doing it right, in my opinion. This city was using social media prior to me getting here, and we are one of the few small cities that does it. We are actually looked at by a lot of smaller jurisdictions as how to do it, and a lot of them would like to see a policy about it, but it turns out we don't have one. I've been teaching some classes on it and speaking about our use of social media and records retention. People have been very interested, and so when I go and talk to them, I've had to let them know we're just doing it, and it's scaring them to death that we have no policy in place. A government with no policy is very scary. But we wanted to do this to outline it for staff and for all of you. So those are the 3 major changes to the personnel manual.
So let me clarify this. You, as the social media spokesperson for the city and public information, you can make a statement. But if any of the council people chime in on that or clarify it, that would not be permitted.
If 4 of you began discussing on there,
okay. But you 1 would be is okay, 2 is okay, 3 is okay.
If there was a quorum, you would be violating.
Because we've had some lively discussions in the past. I just tried to read a comment too much. But.
Yeah. And
also, just a conference call between 4 council people. That's a violation.
Or email. Same thing, and I've obviously counseled all of you on that prior. Same thing. We're just trying to make sure that we have a good system in place, a kind of a warning system for any elected official, whether it's you or someone in the future. It's kind of a protection for those and kind of an education about it.
Councilperson Mutchler.
So, City Clerk Taylor, you're in 2-1-E. You're advising us not to participate.
In 2-1-E, you're advising us not to participate in the city's social media websites, Facebook, whatever, because it could be, but not necessarily that it is. If somebody were to say, correct a figure of a number, something that was stated on the social media website, and no, it was really this, it was that, or a comment, we're okay. It's just that when you start cutting off the trail, the three people before me spoke, I really can't speak if I'm the fourth person. Correct. Really what you're saying.
Correct.
Okay.
This is an advisement. I would never proceed to tell an elected official what to do. And I would also add that there is an inherent value to an elected official being able to communicate with their constituents. You know, it's really hard for me to tell you should never talk to the public. You're voted on by them, so they probably want to hear from you. Yeah, you and I have spoken a little bit about record retention. That's a little bit of a headache for me. That's not really related to this in general, but, you know, anytime
it's
you guys go out and comment, I have to figure out a way to save it. Yeah. And that's something that all jurisdictions are very, very concerned about with all the warnings we've been getting from the Secretary of State and lawsuits coming up. But that's not really addressed in this. This is simply providing an advisement to you to consider not participating so as not to violate the state.
You've written here, should not, but you did not write, shall not.
Correct. And, that.
And then last, you have the, on 2.2c, violates legal ownership. Is that a copyright? Somebody's posting something that's copyright. Is that what you're referring to?
Correct.
Councilperson Hansen, then Goodrich.
Wouldn't the same thing apply, Sam, if I got on my Facebook page and made some comment about what the city was doing and three other council members chimed in to either agree or disagree?
Yes.
It doesn't have to be the city's Facebook page. Okay.
But I don't control your private Facebook page.
No, I understand that, but it would still violate, nor do you control my private email.
Correct.
And four of us could get together off of the city's email, but we're still breaking the law.
Yes. I'm very confident none of you are doing that, so I appreciate that.
Councilperson Goodrich?
I thought just came to me on military leave. What is the city's policy if you're a reservist and your unit gets called up? Do we maintain their position in the city until they come back?
Yeah, we're legally required to do that by federal.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. But this is a state law that provides that they receive 21 days of paid military leave for that initial aspect. They receive all benefits and pay.
That doesn't include their reservists, or does that include a reservist's summer duty?
Sure.
Correct. The reason why this came up.
So you get 21 days total then.
Correct. And that does not account for if they have sick leave or vacation time. So this is above and beyond that. We have a police officer who is in the reserves, and that's where we caught this. He said, hey, I've got my training during the weekend, and he's an officer, so he needs to not work a shift, and how do I do this? And that's when we noticed, oh, this isn't what state law says anymore. They've changed it to 21 days.
Councilperson Zimmerman, then Mutchler, and then over to Malpezzi.
At the risk of doing another no-brainer here. To me, the Facebook and that, the public thing, that's a public forum, an ongoing public forum. And unless we're talking about stuff that we're going to vote on, it seems it would be a public conversation that everyone can chime in on or not chime in on, that things that have been discussed and in the past, its history, it just seems it's an open public electronic media. It's like writing letters back and forth through the Bellingham Herald. You know, we can all do that.
I don't know if the Herald would let you do that, but...
I mean, like letters to the editor.
State law is very explicit that a quorum of council members cannot discuss city-related business, and they leave it at that. They don't tell you the topics or anything. They simply say city-related business. So to me, it's very, very, very all-encompassing.
Yeah, to me, it's kind of a major gag order, free speech, because I can understand it on issues that are coming up that we're going to be voted on. But if they're already voted on, or if they're a public discussion that, you know, a dog bit someone, where you stand on that, da-da-da-da-da, all those things. To me, it's an open public forum. It's not like we're trying to hide. If we all, you know, get together in some back room, there's four of us, then that's a major violation of
the meeting.
But
the point is discussion. You're having a discussion. You're speaking back and forth to each other. So that's I mean, you have to look and go, am I having a discussion with Steve and Mel and Paul that they're engaging back and forth?
So
the public has a right to have access to that. Maybe someday they'll determine Facebook is public enough where that's okay. But
it just seems like, you know, there's, especially during election time, people are calling you up asking, where do you stand on this, that kind of stuff.
Well, that isn't a discussion.
Okay.
You
but if they ask the same question.
You just don't have a right to say, hey, I just made this statement. John, what do you think of this statement? And Paul, what do you think of this statement?
Yeah.
And Mel, what do you think of this statement? And then they answer back. Now you have a violation.
In terms of the gag order thing, I guess I'd say you'd have to take that up with the voters in 1970 who approved this. You know, they approved this and the Public Records Act because they demanded transparency from their elected officials. So,
well, it seems real transparent.
This is a citizenry asking elected officials to be transparent.
If you're thrown
in
out there,
the 70s, they were looking at the backroom cigar deal.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. They were looking
in this situation, it's electronic. It's out there in cyberspace. And so it's, to me, that's as transparent as you can be. So.
Someday it may change. Councilperson Mutzler.
Yeah, I think that's one of the great things about our state, is the open meetings policies. Not every state has this. And I appreciate our city clerk is very vigilant on that, and I think it's very important we follow that. It occurred to me kind of in a humorous way because of sometimes the articles in the Herald will elicit quite a robust conversation among the community members. And I can't imagine any council member would ever use a pseudonym or anonymous posting on those things. But I wonder sometimes if there are more than three or four council members that are weighing in on some of those matters and how that would be handled.
Please don't keep me up at night with those.
Yeah. Try to figure those out. Anyway, I'd like to move the adoption of the policy. I think it just needs a is it a resolution or an ordinance?
This is a resolution. Okay. I'm all set.
Okay.
Second, further discussion, Councilman Montezzi.
I'm good with everything you guys are saying over here. However, that's just not what this says. I mean, I'm okay if we want to change it to council members shall not discuss matters on there, but, you know, it says we can't comment at all. You know, we can't, you know, we're having the downtown cleanup day. You know, a council member can't go on there and click, I like this. You know, I think it's too restrictive. The council members know what they can and can't do. We know we can't discuss things. But, you know, just flat out saying that, you know, that we shall not comment on anything on our own social media website is too restrictive, in my opinion. So I can't support this the way it's written.
Got a point.
Okay. Further discussion? Councilperson Ingram had your hand up? Nope. Councilperson Zimmerman?
Just to clarify, Sam, you said the lawsuits coming forward. Are there court lawsuits now under this sort of thing?
There's nothing specifically related to social media, but there have been lawsuits and cases where health bodies have used newer technology to violate the Open Public Meetings Act, and this is in the same vein.
Okay, so there's nothing pending now that you know of that
we
should be aware of.
No.
It seems kind of more of a...
I appreciate Councilperson Pezzi's comments, and I think all political bodies are going to be struggling with this issue as we evolve. And it'd be interesting to see someone winning that case that you said, oh, we're taking down the flower baskets, and I like that. I would love to be in the audience watching that case be tried, going, ooh, he did something bad. It'll be interesting to see how it all flips out. Councilperson Mutchler?
Yeah, I do agree with Councilman Malpezzi. I'm in a little awkward position because I made the motion, but I want to suggest, and perhaps Councilmember Malpezzi could suggest an amendment that would be limited to discussion or something like that on that 2.1e. Because I did raise a question about that a little earlier. I marked that same paragraph.
Shall not use social media sites to violate the Open Public Meetings Act.
Like that. That covers it.
Yeah, I'm really not a big fan of legislating from
is
the bench.
Broad enough, Mr. Clerk?
Legislating from the bench here, but
yes, it's very broad. I could leave it that, but I mean, I should just clarify. I mean, the city is not the one who would get in trouble if this is a violation. All of you would. I mean, this is a civil penalty involved. I mean, it was kind of designed to help you, but it's a vote you can make. So
I'm
comfortable with that.
I agree with council member because I've had times said I'm gonna show up at the cleanup day, come out to the cleanup day. I've just violated it on the city's website.
In that context, no, you haven't.
It says I should not comment or use.
Oh, the personnel policy. I thought you were talking about the state law.
Yeah, I violated our policy then by doing that.
You violated a recommendation and a policy.
Yes.
It's again, it's not a shall, it's a should. It's a strong recommendation to consider not participating so you don't subject yourself to fines. There's nothing in here that's explicitly telling you cannot participate. You should not.
Again, in America,
our legal system, unlike possibly maybe Italy, our legal system is based on logical men and women making logical decisions on their fellow human beings. Councilperson Hanson.
I like what Steve just came up with, and I'm going to move that as an amendment to the motion, since he didn't put it in a motion form.
Fair enough.
And I'll speak to it if there's a second.
I'll second it.
Okay, been moving second. Councilperson Hanson.
That puts the onus right back on us to do the right thing. It identifies that we shall not violate the Open Meetings Act, and you have to use your own conscience at that point. And if you don't use your conscience correctly, you could get hammered by one of the local news media and fined by the Public Disclosure Commission. So, you know, buyer beware. If you're going to jump into those sites and you think you're okay, go ahead, but you may end up being in violation.
To be clear, you would actually be subjected to a civil penalty from the Whatcom County Prosecutor's Office.
Fine, wherever it comes from. But the point being that if the chamber puts on their thing that they're going to take down the flower basket Saturday, and I chime in and say, along with three other council members that say I'm going to be there, and somebody wants to take us to court over that because we all commented on the same subject, I like what Steve came up with.
Okay, Councilor Zimmerman?
No, I agree. You know, what about if we all wrote letters? Boom. Are we all communicating? Are we all chiming in? That's what I was getting.
Depends on what the letter.
If we just back up the technology to the old. I think it's a timely thing. If we're all discussing things that are going to happen in the future, the things that are happening in the past, that's a different deal.
And I appreciate the concern. I'm sorry. I appreciate the concern of Mr. Taylor, and he shouldn't have to babysit or police us, but we should police each other. I mean, we can, you know, this is heading in a direction here, and somebody can say, we need to stop this at this point. And that's what we should be doing.
Point of order, it is the staff's, one of the staff's duties is to keep council from getting into trouble. And the staff speaks about it on several occasions. Okay, on Councilperson Hansen's amendment, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries. On the main motion, we did get a
motion.
Yeah, the main motion. We did get a second on that one.
Mm-hmm.
So all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Great. Moving on.
Well done, Steve.
Mayor reports and comments. Mayor has none. Well, I'm going to go a quick one because I want to share this with you. Sometimes you wonder about our Friday lean meetings. And the great thing about lean is the newest employee we have, the lowest paid employee upstairs, that's the beauty of lean. She came forward and said, why do we write all these things on Mylar sheets of paper that are expensive, take a special pen, we roll them up and we store them all over the place? And here's a new employee and go, why do we do that? We have them electronically. This is expensive paper. This is special paper. I have to chase the mayor down to get a signature. We don't do that. Why do we need to do that? And that's just the beauty of lean, is that everybody sitting around a table, the newest, lowest paid employee says, hey, and that's the question we always ask, why are we doing this? We have it electronically. Why are we storing all this paper? Why are we doing this? Technology has moved on. So that's the beauty of lean. And again, if you ever come on a Friday from 8 to 9 upstairs, it's fun. You laugh.
You got to lock out.
Yori usually makes a fool out of himself in some regard. Okay. No, council reports. Councilperson Ingram.
Well, if any of the staff or the audience for that matter or anybody else wants to the media, go down to the American Legion Hall and check out the brand new, freshly painted flagpoles that the Ferndale Kiwanis Club did last weekend. They look pretty spiffy instead of being all a big old bunch of rust buckets.
Good job to the Kiwanis. Any other council reports? Councilperson Zimmerman, then Goodrich.
There is a meeting by the Whatcom Food Network Planning Committee. It's all about
working to build common understanding and facilitate collaborative efforts toward an equitable, sustainable, and healthy food system for all. This is going to be October 17th. It's a Monday. That will be the day that we meet here, and there's some afternoon sessions, and I'll get this to Sam so you can get it out to people.
What time?
It's, well, I'll get it to you. It's various spots. It's 12:30 to 1, and then there's a forum between 1 and 4, and then, of course, there's refreshments at 5 or whatever, 4 to 5. But I'll get a copy of this, all the details, but just talk about our whole farmer's market and the schools and nutrition and when we tie in with, you know, land use issues on planning and everything from, you know, having chickens in your background. But just a real concentration on food. So I'll try to attend that and give you a little bit more background on it.
Okay, thanks. Councilperson Goodrich.
This was a last week that the three council members, myself, Ingram, and Zimmerman attended the, and a couple other folks did, the tsunami forum that was put on by the state. It was very informative. We in Ferndale don't have to worry about a tsunami.
Not quite. They said it could come up the river pretty good.
Well, it could come, yeah, but I don't think it's going to, I don't think I need to worry about my house yet. But
I guarantee I don't have to worry about my house.
Yeah, but it was very informative. I know I afterwards I called my daughter who lives in Aberdeen and told her, hey, the earth starts shaking at the higher ground because, you know, you're not going to have much of a warning down there.
Ooh, Aberdeen, yeah, drive fast.
Yeah.
It's 50 to 100 foot.
Yeah, it's even worse than my daughter's Coast Guard stations in Westport.
She's got a boat.
At least they have a boat they can go on.
Be on the boat.
Yeah, get on the
close
boat.
Close the hatches.
But it was very informative and, worthwhile to attend. I thought it was interesting, about the abandoned coal mine underneath part of Bellingham.
Yeah.
That they mentioned, too.
Big part of Bellingham.
That an issue and possibly in an earthquake and things. So.
Well, thank you for attending.
Yeah.
Any other council reports?
Mm-hmm. You watched 60 Minutes last night, the mayor of that Japanese city stayed on the second floor, sent his whole staff up to the roof. He died, and they all lived.
What are you trying to say?
I'm going to go down with the ship. Well, let's see now. Since City Hall only has a second floor, okay, that's still right.
Climb that little tower.
It's got a roof.
Yeah, it's got a roof. Yeah.
Climb that little tower.
Okay. Any other council reports? Councilperson Zimmerman.
I brought this up, and I don't think it's a thing that, you know, needs to be discussed in executive session like that. But there happens to be a auction on that huge piece of property on the corner of Church and Mountain View. And it seems if it goes up for auction that the city might be in a position to be. We have some interest, I would think, from stormwater retention to parks to trails to a lot of these things. It's being put on by the FDIC, which is a large, you know, it's in foreclosure. So it's just one of those little opportunities. If you stop by and read the deal, it's just
minimum bid.
Don't know. They haven't released that information yet. It just seems like that could solve some future problems if we look at it today. October 11th.
What are you proposing the city do?
That you and Greg and, you know, think about it, talk about it, see if something might be of interest, if something, if we could find, you know, if that was at the right price, would that be in our future plans? Would it be, could we get some funds from the county? Is it type of a thing that we could tie in with economic development or stormwater or however we could. Greg's pretty good at working those things.
Price is probably going to be over $1 million. We'd have to put a vote of the people.
That could be good.
It's going to be sold that day.
Yeah, it'll, yeah. Yeah. Quick
19,
vote.
19 vote.
Is it 19?
Yeah. What is this sitter vote?
So, but it's
16 days.
Just interesting timing on everything if you drive by that.
Okay. Councilperson Mutchler.
I have a couple things. Saturday the 15th. Is the last day for Farmers Market, and it's the Pumpkin Fest. And I think I heard they're going to catapult pumpkins this time, which sounds like a lot of fun. And then I like
not across the river.
That's too bad. And I wanted to let the students know that are here tonight that I think they should know there's a candidate.
Silence.
To let the students know, there's a candidates debate next Tuesday, at the 11th, at Central School from 6 to 9 for folks that are running for office in this community. They should come out for that.
Central Elementary School.
6 to 9 next
Tuesday. Okay, any other council reports?
By the Record Journal.
By the Record Journal. Okay. First time we've ever done this. Does anybody from the high school want to make any statements? You sit here and listen.
Extra credit.
You want to speak anything?
Extra credit.
Extra credit.
Glad you're here.
Yeah, no, I'm telling you. You don't believe me. Extra credit. Ask Mr. Brown. Okay, staff, treasurer.
Nothing.
City administrator.
Nothing.
Planning director. Nothing. Really? Clerk.
Nothing.
Public works.
Nothing.
And the police is not going to report. He's not going to vacation.
Motion to adjourn.
All in favor, say it by saying aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned.
Okay, I still think climb up right here, walk on.